Thank you for joining us for Be Our Geek, where everyone is a geek about something and where we cover your pop culture landscape through our geek lens. Of course, I'm Ms. Shannon, as usual, joined by my good friend and co-host Jayton Satia from the Twin Cities Film Fest.
Hello.
And we are back broadcasting from the Twin Cities Film Fest studios. We did go on a bit of a walkabout last episode, Jayton, and I just want to remind all of our Be Our Geek friends out there that we were a part of your No Sleep Till Brooklyn 48-hour no sleep. What did you call it?
Eyes Wide Open.
Eyes Wide Open.
And it was
a membership drive?
It was a membership drive and awareness for independent films and independent artists. It was the same weekend that our lineup was released on our website. So it was all-encompassing. And me being me, I said, what's the best way for a nonprofit executive director to get the word out but not spend any money? So I decided to deprive myself of sleep, not for 24 hours, not for 36 hours, but for 48 hours.
Which kind of makes sense, because we are kind of accustomed to, in the film world, of those 48-hour film festivals of a lot of different varieties.
Correct. And the people don't know that majority of, let's just say there's a night scene or a dusk scene, I would say 99% of all the films actually use natural light for that, because
right.
not everybody can afford big giant studios and big giant buildings that we can
recreate dusk.
to recreate dusk. So a lot of our independent filmmakers and artists stay awake. You know, they get to work at 7 p.m. and they don't leave until, 12 in the morning the next day, or 12, noon the next day. So we're accustomed to it, so this was, it was an homage to my filmmakers.
And
I'll go with that.
And I like the fact that people could then, because you were also kind of like streaming films, so if people were willing to get a membership and donate to your drive, then you would let them pick one of the films that you would stream.
I had some interesting picks that came in. People who became members of our organization said, obviously glad to become a member, glad to support the organization, but if you have a chance... Because it was at the Reveal rooftop bar at the AC Marriott here at the West End, and I was outside the entire 48 hours, but I did have a very nice cabana that was allocated to me.
Yes.
And the cabana had a TV, so I was able to stream Netflix or Hulu or Amazon Prime. So I got plenty of recommendations on those streaming platform, and the caveat was it can't be a studio film that is now on Netflix.
Right.
It can't be... a film that I've already watched before. So again, you don't know, but you can recommend, and I can say I've already seen that one. So it'll be a new discovery for me, and I actually expanded it halfway through the 48-hour stunt to say, if you guys want to give me show ideas, so I'll watch the first episode of the whatever series this is.
So did you find some really good binges that you weren't aware of
I
before.
Did actually put a couple on my list, but there was a couple of them, and I'm not going to mention what films they were, or because then the person will be outed who gave me the film, that I could only get through by 20 minutes of it.
Oh, because it was bad?
Because it was just not my taste.
Oh, okay.
So I don't ever say it's bad, because it's good for somebody else.
Fair enough.
So that's for me as a default, and I agree with this. Like, just because I love it doesn't mean you should, but I want you to recommend that to me, and they did, and it just wasn't my taste, and then I had plenty of other options to pick from, and I just went to my next one. So,
did you manage to stay awake the entire time?
I did the entire 48 hours. So
I think there was a couple of bets, and this is the problem: is that I'm very good at creating notes in order to do the show that we are working on, and terrible about writing notes during the show to go back to bets that we had made. And so I think that means that I then won the bet, because our guest geek at the time, Raisa Matala, basically said you were going to make it to like 24 hours and then pass out.
No, I think she specifically mentioned she thought I could make 30.
Okay.
And then I would just like pass out for like 2 or 3 hours. And which then Raisa is my board president.
So she was hoping that you would like nap.
For the sanity of what's coming, which is the festival in the next couple of weeks.
Because we both know your wife and don't want you to die.
Right. That whole thing about not dying. And being
dying is inconvenient when you have a family.
But no, I did end up making it the entire 48 hours. It wasn't, would I do it again? Nope.
You say that, but now I feel like if we upped the challenge next year, you would do it again. I know you that well.
I already have a few people saying, that was actually great. Like, you got some great social media out of it. You got, some great mentions, and we should do this again. And I'm like, we as in you, not me. Like, somebody else needs to step up.
Here's what I think. I think we should go for 72 hours next time. I think you have to, like, go all in, Jay.
Who's our guest today?
Yeah. All right. We do, of course, have a guest geek that's going to be in. And, Jay, you're going to be very excited about this one because I am bringing to you this week a very true Renaissance geek. And by that, I mean that not only have I seen him at every con here in the Twin Cities, he is also a local author. He is also the lead singer of a country music band. And he is the live host of two of the coolest geek-related trivia fantastic nights here in the Twin Cities.
So basically, don't have me do the 48 anymore. Have him, because he barely has time as is in his regular schedule to sleep.
I was really excited. So his name is Taylor Sisko, and I was surprised that he had time to come and do our show. So it was very kind of him to come and be on the show. So we're going to talk to him about some projects that he has going on. I did bring up one of his songs that I wanted you to be able to hear it.
Right.
And he actually writes for one of our favorite online publications, The Town Twin Cities Geek. And we know we're friends with like Hal and some other people that are over there, and they do really cool work here. And if people aren't familiar with it, then go to TwinCitiesGeek.com. And he put out a really interesting article last month called How to Avoid Problematic Shows and Enjoy TV and Movies This Fall.
You know how important that is right now?
Exactly.
And that's brilliant. That's great.
And so I thought that that would be a great thing for him to come and talk about. And one of the movies that I don't think is going to make either his list or your list is something that we did talk about, though, recently with one of our other guest geeks. We did talk about the movie Venom. That is out in theaters
and
now.
You know what I've done since then is I've actually have the Eminem song on my playlist.
Oh,
I've listened to it in a while.
I didn't bring that again this week. I'll have to I'll find that for us and we can play that in the next segment. But I did get a chance to go out and see Venom.
Okay.
So I did see that. Yeah, so I did see it. And I also know that we need to come up with a scale, a Be Our Geek 1 to 5-ish scale. And maybe we can ask our guest geek if he has something.
Five being
the best.
Okay,
yeah,
the best.
And
okay.
One being no one needs to waste their money on this.
So it's not like the DEFCON system, which is 1 is the worst.
No. And okay, so cool. I think that would be too counterintuitive and ask people to think too hard about our. But we need to come up with, like, do we give them 5 somethings? And so
fair
you
enough.
And
okay.
I have to kind of, like, brainstorm that. We can workshop it. Because I think I went with our friend Ryan Wood. And he is much more familiar with the comics than I am. I know of them. I know of the Spider-Man universe. I know of Venom, but I was not that. That was not the primary reading material as Miss Shannon was a young geek girl. So I gave it more stars / revelry than our friend Ryan.
Okay.
He gave it 1 out of 5, whatever we decide to pick. He gave it 2.
Whoa.
I gave it 1 out of 5, whatever we decide to pick. I gave it 4.
Okay.
And so we had a very spirited discussion about it afterwards. Yeah.
That's a fairly big discrepancy.
Yeah, definitely.
You
definitely.
Know? And again, are we doing like the 0.5s, like 2.5s or?
I thought about that. I rounded up because I was firmly in that maybe 3.5.
You should just commit. You should just commit, like half up or half down.
That's why I rounded up, is that I was going, you know what? If I truly enjoyed it, I laughed out loud at certain parts. It's surprisingly, I had gone into this film thinking that it was, they presented it as so much darker than it actually is.
Okay.
Like, they really presented it as if it was going to be this Venom character, and it was more like Predator dark. It absolutely is not at all.
And have not seen it yet, so
and
it's
cartoony.
Hardy.
Tom Hardy, it's cartoony violence, so it's not even really gory, which it kind of made it. The trailer, in my mind, I was thinking, this Venom's, he's crushing heads and doing all this stuff, and it's like, nope, not really any blood, none of that kind of stuff. They use a lot of the S word. They use that's as much swearing as they do, and since they're with their rating system, I feel like they used every opportunity to use the S word, though. Like, every chance, they were like, look how edgy we are, but that's the edge. So they use that broad spectrum. Everything is what the and you this, and this is bulls, and it, like, everything is that.
In the long run, do you think that'll hurt the film?
No. Okay. I think it's fine. You know, because they're not going at that whole Deadpool crowd, so they didn't go that far.
Right.
But it, you know, they wanted to make it adult. But I, you know, and to paraphrase what our friend Ryan thought about it, the movie is very basic.
Okay.
It's not trying to change the genre. It's a very predictable origin story is what
sure.
it is. And
okay.
I think he had created an expectation that it was going to be more than that.
Correct.
And since I didn't come in that expectation, that's probably part of the reason why I liked it more. Is that I'm going, whatever, it laughed, and like, cool, Venom's neat. And I, you know, when we were talking about this before, you know that I'm not really an anti-hero person. I'm
Correct.
All in on hero.
Yep.
And they did, the way they did this, he's kind of not even an anti-hero. He's just a hero. Like, everybody else is so bad that you don't even really think that he's bad. I didn't know I needed
best.
A symbiote, I know that my life would be so much better. I would have a better time getting my son to school.
If
I would
you
have
had
a
symbiote?
If I had a symbiote. That's what's missing in my life, is a symbiote.
Can we get an individual human being to become your symbiote?
You mean like a personal assistant?
Yeah.
That wouldn't be enough, because a personal assistant couldn't cover me up, and then if somebody like tried to rob us, couldn't
yeah.
chomp their head off.
Get a ninja as
nope.
your personal assistant.
Symbiote. Wait till you see it, and you'll go, I don't want a ninja.
I'm looking forward to seeing
that. I don't
that
want a bodyguard. I want a symbiote. You know, that's right. I was missing that. That and a motorcycle. Those are the two things that I walked away from this movie.
Maybe you can get a moped.
Nope, I don't want
to. You can get one of those bird scooters that are
around. I need to go all in on motorcycle. So I will stick with my 4 out of whatever we eventually decide
I will come in with a rating once I see the film.
Okay.
And I'm most likely going to see the film. We're about 2 weeks out from the festival. I tend to do a movie afternoon where I just decompress before the festival starts and typically go to a film that I think I would at least enjoy, if not take my mind off of things. And
this
not,
will
not
do
have
that.
Me like think too much.
This is escapism.
So
there's some parts that you're like, that's typical comic book movie dumb.
Okay.
Where you're like, really?
Okay,
fine, cool.
So you would say this one as opposed to A Star Is Born.
Oh, gosh, yes. Star Is Born is something that is worthy.
Got it.
But is emotional, you know, it there's things that you'll come away feeling all the feels. If you want something if you don't want the feels right now, go see Venom. You won't come away with any feels. You'll laugh at some of the real things, and you'll go, you know what? I'm going to fire all my staff and just hire symbiotes. That's what you'll do.
The one thing that I do on a regular basis, and if you come to the festival, you will see this. I will have a walkie-talkie on me because I want to make sure all the staff and everybody, if they need me, I'm available. Next thing you will see is wireless headphones around my neck, because when I'm walking around the festival, I have my jams on my phone and I'm listening to music as I'm walking around, because that focuses me.
Right.
So I love recommendations, obviously, for films, because that's what I love and, you know, live and breathe. But I love good music recommendations as well, things that I could just jam to. So I'm actually looking forward to the sample that you brought from Mr. Trey.
Yes, Trey Aaron/Taylor Sisko/T Aaron Sisko, depending
money,
on which
T
one
Daddy,
of his projects
whatever.
He wanted to. So we are going to talk to him, listen to his music, and talk about the book
awesome.
That he recently released, all when we return on Be Our Geek. Welcome back to Be Our Geek. I'm Ms. Shannon. Jane Satia is still here. We're still at the Twin Cities Film Fest Studios. And now it is time for us to have a nice little conversation with this episode's guest geek. You may have heard him on your MP3 player. You may have seen him locally talking to you about Doctor Who or Star Trek trivia. You may have seen him most recently at any of the cons here in the Twin Cities. And he is my good friend, Taylor Sisko. Hello, Taylor.
Hi, Shannon. Thanks for having me.
So, you know what? One of my favorite parts about doing this show is I feel like I even get to know my friends. Because
You discover them a little deeper, yeah.
Because it's totally a little different, because I may talk to you, because Taylor, we've been on panels together at cons, you know, and you are much more accomplished at all of the paneling than I am. Like, didn't you just come from Fall Con here in town?
I did. I swung by early this morning out there in St. Paul. It was, it's Fall Con.
Okay. It is Fall Con. And I know that you're actually busy later today, because today here in the Twin Cities is the Star Trek Bar Crawl, correct?
Yes, 7th year in a row.
Ah, wow. So tell everybody a little bit about that real quick.
So I'm actually just adjacent or cursorily related to the Star Trek bar crawl, but you kind of mentioned the Star Trek trivia, and the Star Trek bar crawl is sort of responsible for Star Trek trivia coming into being.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my wife and I, huge Trekkies. That's sort of why we got married. Not the only reason, but it definitely didn't hurt. And we went down to Chicago for the Star Trek convention about 5 years ago. And we, you know, it was a con, had a good time. Then we had con withdrawals afterwards. We're sort of like the last day of camp. You don't want to go. Yeah.
Right.
And we're just like hungry for anything Star Trek. And we heard about this Star Trek pub crawl, which at that time was only in their second year.
Right.
And we went and it was incredible. It's like, you know, over 100 Trekkies in full uniform taking over Northeast Minneapolis.
Because they don't warn the bars. I've been to it.
You
just show up. That's the best part. Yeah. So all of the Trekkies know that we're going, but nobody else does. And so they coordinate it all online, and they kind of tell you where to start. And
that's
you just
awesome.
Show up and bombard Northeast Minneapolis.
That is great. Yeah.
It's like an organized flash mob that moves.
I love it.
Yeah. And so you can, if you're going to run a little late, you can kind of like keep track of it online and like pop in different places. And then sometimes you get to one place and it's too busy, so you just got to go, I'm going to go to another bar. And so there's just always a bunch of people going, what? How?
So is it expected now by the bar owners or the managers that something is going to happen? Are there regular bars versus like newer ones that you start off at?
Yeah, the older bars that have been part of it for the past few years, they kind of expect it. Okay. Although this year they're throwing them for a loop because it's usually in August. And they moved it to October
this year.
So
they think it's not happening.
Right.
And it's just going to happen. And they're going to be like, oh, my God, we're so understaffed right now.
Oh, it's great because every bar is a Star Trek bar when 100-plus Trekkies show up.
Right.
I mean, the first year we went, one of the best stories, and I'll clean the language up, but we were at Mayslax.
Yes.
Oh, sure. Yep.
And we start pouring in. Mayslax, you know, has the two rooms. They have, like, the bar area, and then there's the stage area where they have bands playing. There's a band setting up, and the drummer was getting his kit ready, and the bassist was kind of tuning his instrument, and he just kind of, they both stopped. And like started staring as all these like, you know, Star Trek characters started walking in.
Right.
And the bassist.
So it's one and then five
right.
and then 25.
It's just this nonstop stream for like a good 2 minutes of just, and we filled the room and the bassist just looked at the drummers like, where the F did you put up flyers? So great.
And there's always some people that are super on board and like jump in and like want to take pictures with all of us. And then there's other people that are like, who invited these people and are just annoyed. Like, so annoyed.
Would you, if you were just a normal consumer at that bar, any of these bars who get flash mobbed by these Trekkies, would the diversity in what you see, like, does that make sense? I'm very interested in who shows up, older generation, younger generation, people from professional, you know, like people you would expect to see in suits, just the way they look. Like, does that make sense? Like, the inner Trekkie comes out? How is the diversity in the people who show up? Because I'm a Trekkie, right? And people wouldn't know until I told them, like, I just love, that's what we binge on.
Right.
To talk a little bit about the diversity of the crowd that comes out.
Oh, yeah. The Trek crawlers, the diversity of the participants matches the diversity of the audience. I mean,
got it.
Got, well, every age starting at 21, because you have to be of legal age. But 21 to, I mean, there's people that are definitely, you know, some silver foxes running around.
Awesome.
Nice.
All the
awesome.
Series, all the movies. So you'll find Kirks hanging out with Picards. You'll find Vulcans and Klingons. You got new uniforms, even the newer movies.
Yeah, I was going to say the new Chris Pine stuff like all and all that.
And then somebody will show up with something and, like, even somebody that you have to, like, deep dive in your brain. Like, what one episode did you just jump on board? Because there's always one. And they're really good, but you still don't know who they are.
Yes.
And then I'll go to somebody like Taylor who's got, you know, it's also TC. TC Trek?
Yes,
how is
TC
Trek?
Trivia.
Yeah. And so I'll go to him and I'm like, you know who that is. And he'll go, that's a Silurian from the so-and-so. I just made that up. That's a Doctor Who one. I'm like, I'm cross-pollinating. But he'll say that's because I won't know. And then I don't want to tell them because those people also get like super offended that you don't know who their
Fair
third. I mean, it's like, come on now. You pick the third most popular. They're in two episodes, and then now they're mad at me because I didn't know who they
were.
Well,
some of them. There is some gatekeeping just because the Trek community is just like the geek community. But, I mean, for the most part, it is a lot of fun. Another, not as funny as the drummer and bassist, but just last year, I went as Benny Russell, which was Sisko's character in that great episode where, you know, it's the 50s sci-fi kind of mixing together. So to an outsider, I'm just wearing a suit jacket, glasses, have a cane. But then it's like, whatever, maybe he hurt himself or something like that. So I look completely normal, and I get to Dusty's, which was one of the bars last year, and the bouncer's checking my ID, and I'm like, oh, thanks, get ready. He's like, hey, hold on just a second. It's like, oh, what's up? He's like, just so you know, there's a bunch of those Star Trek people in there. guys are like, oh, man, you have no idea how much Star Trek people I am. Like, this is
oh, my God.
Don't you love that? Because you do, you also, Taylor, do a better job of weaving in. Because I honestly, I'll be honest with you, Jaden. Like, I have, like, totally fallen off my whole cosplay. And you know I like costumes. But when we're at the local cons recently, like, I didn't even try. Because there's so many people that are so much better at it than I am that I just kind of just go, I tap out. You know, I just tap out. But, like, you came up with some good stuff this year at Convergence as well, though.
Oh, yeah, I try. Well, Convergence is different, especially with it being over the July 4th weekend. I dress more for the heat. I learned my lesson the hard way.
Yes.
Right.
Years ago, the first time where I went as a
Wookiee?
I went as a Klingon, but nice. I went as an ancient Klingon, Kayla.
Yes, yes, yes.
So
yes,
I'm
yes.
covered in foam rubber and leather and suede. And I got jeans on underneath it so I can, like, use the bathroom without too much trouble. And then I was fine in my car because I have air conditioning. And I was actually fine when I first got to the hotel. But after the first or second panel, I was like, oh, it's getting a little warm. Because
right.
there's thousands of people
yes.
at Convergence.
Yes.
Middle of the summer. There's not a lot of shade. Even if you get outside, there's still thousands of people everywhere, all the body heat. I was like, okay, this is that. That's this is the
not
last
doing
year.
This.
You just lost 5 pounds.
Exactly. So I try and keep it.
Sure.
Weather appropriate.
Yeah. Well, I was very fortunate this year at Convergence to be moderating a panel that Taylor was part of.
Okay.
And so it was an Afrofuturism panel. And
got
so
it.
We had some great panelists that were on it. And that kind of leads us to the, because this year, one of the things I thought was great about Convergence, and they kind of had bits and pieces of this before, but I do feel like this year we definitely had some local panels that talked about some subjects that are near and dear to my heart and Taylor's heart, and Jaden, I think you'll agree, because we not only had the Afrofuturism panel, but we also had one called It Was Different Back Then, where we would talk about the subject matters of certain things that we may be fans of but are highly problematic, and how do you draw that line as a fan and go, can I still enjoy this? Do I make an excuse for it? Do I expect us to do better? And how do you kind of, like, justify that as we go along?
Well, I think there's a lot of that. So, like, George Orwell in 1984, there's that thing he calls about doublethink, where
right.
you can actually hold two opposing, and it's usually used with negative connotation. But I think with fandoms, there's a little bit of doublethink that goes on, but not necessarily from a negative viewpoint. It's more like we appreciate the bigger picture. I mean, if you watch even like Star Wars,
right.
was, 1977, there were, except for James Earl Jones,
right.
I'm not as big a Star Wars fan, but I'm pretty sure that was a pretty monochromatic cast
correct.
Back then. But it was still kind of groundbreaking in the genre. You can still appreciate it, even for lack of diversity, and even Princess Leia or Carrie Fisher's character is one of the only like female characters
right.
that actually has a character.
Right.
So it's very, very unrepresentative. But you can still appreciate all the things it did. It's still a solid story, even though it has some of those elements. And some of the more troublesome things, like a lot of the 80s movies, both genre and non-genre, there's some stuff in those where you're like, oh, my God, like even for that time, how they get away with it.
Exactly.
I actually joke about this all the time with friends. Like there's the bullying that we actually experience versus what was portrayed on screen is so hugely different.
Yes.
Like, so my nickname, again, I can't really repeat it, but my nickname for a big part of my childhood leading up to early high school was a derogatory epithet for homosexuals.
Got
right.
And that was just, like, casual. They would throw
yep.
it out in, like,
yeah.
PG movies. Or, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, you'd watch, like, It was
right.
released for television
yep.
back in 1990. And you could still appreciate, like, okay, it is definitely different. It's one of Stephen King's, like, seminal works. It's kind of child-focused with this child point of view and does a generational thing. But, like, the language they're using so casually, like, with the hate speech and things like that, you just kind of like compartmentalize it.
Right.
Like, we don't excuse it. We definitely recognize for what it is.
Are you seeing that nowadays with the new content that is coming up, that at least it's better? And then obviously, you know, let's just say 20 years from now or 30 years from now, our future selves will look back and say, you know, they dismissed these things or they said this a lot and now it's not appropriate anymore. So, again, are we making a progress as a society at least to move in that right direction from that diversity side and from the. Yeah.
Short answer, yes. I do think
yeah.
we're moving forward. There's progress being made. But I think that the kind of like with social issues, the same problems, like we don't really have a lot of, at least luckily so far, there's not a lot of Klansmen running through South Minneapolis burning crosses.
Right.
But the racism is sort of like has also progressed into a different manifestation. And I think
correct.
The same thing is true in artistic representations where we definitely have a lot more black and brown people, women and people outside the gender binary coming to prominence in genre, television shows, books, movies.
Well, you get Hamilton,
right,
on theater. Yeah. And
But then we still have other small things. We're getting to what I call the Tyler Perry effect.
Yes.
Where sort of tokenization without actual representation, where producers will just shove characters in. Right. Like, look, here's your black guy. And they won't develop him. Or like, oh, look, this woman is like a strong female character, but really she's just the same trope that we've seen 1,000 times. And, you know, I'm not going to badmouth any specific film.
Fair enough.
But there are definitely some pictures that come out where, like, this is actually kind of not the strongest movie.
But right.
They put a bunch of minorities in it, so it's going to get a lot of accolades. And so I think that that's something that, you know, hopefully 10, 20 years out, we'll look back and say, oh, well, they were on the right path, just not quite there yet.
It was a good starting point. Yeah. You know, it's like it shows that we are at least attempting to do some of these things. But when we do it incorrectly, Taylor, do you think that sometimes that actually sets us back, or is it any progress is a start? What do you think?
Well, there's definitely something to be said for getting the foot in the door,
right.
No matter how. I mean, looking back at things like, you know, the old minstrel shows, which became almost entirely populated by black performers towards the end of their popularity, there was just sort of, it was this or you don't eat.
Right.
You know, and so you do what you have to do. And it's really easy for us. I won't use privilege, but it's definitely, it's advantageous. So we have a unique situation where we have hindsight, where we can sit here now, which is much better than it was 70, 80 years ago, and say, oh, well, I can't believe that Step and Fetch It, we're doing that
correct.
For ourselves.
Right.
Like, that's because the other options were like manual labor or, you know, maybe getting lynched or something like
right.
that. So they were taking the opportunity. And because of the work they did, it opened that door a little bit wider for others to come through. I think that's just, it's
are you seeing more openness from the conversation that we're having now, specifically from the quote-unquote geek side and the content that is being put out, whether it's comic books or Star Trek or animation or anything that, you know, where people associated with, oh, that's geek. Do you think there's more openness from that? Because Star Trek has always been one of those, it's, yes, of course, it's space and future, but it's much more, it's always been much more than that.
Well, I think the lasting power is really what comes through. Like, people outside the status quo, like non-white people, non-white cishet males, have been creating content since there was content to be created, but it's really been about those stories. And I think with things like Star Trek, Doctor Who, Red Dwarf, some of the other longer running geek centric properties, what they've done right is that they have the stories first, and then they kind of come back to it, almost like what Shonda Rhimes is doing in television, which
right.
is like,
been successful.
Yeah, like, I'm going to have quality content. And then the fact that it has these diverse casts that are actually more representative of the real world, that's kind of the bonus. It's not really the focus. Or it's not the primary focus, but it's just definitely that it's that icing on the cake that
stories
makes
stories first,
right. right? Well, I remember being part of a panel last year where we were talking about what it was, what it would like when you're looking at future fiction and how it would look. And I remember one of the people on the panel, and I remember he and I got into it quite a lot. But it was basically what he was postulating was, well, the prevailing culture would continue to be the prevailing culture if something happened in a dystopian society. So this is why it's okay that it's monochromatic, which I found highly problematic, this discussion, because it's basically going, well, in something that we are fantasizing, I can't fantasize that it's not.
That's not fantasy.
Same. Right.
You can't. That's not fantasy. If
and
I can't be completely open, there's no boundaries, that's where discovery happens, and that's where new ideas happen. That's where societal progress happens.
But if we're talking about who is creating these works of fiction, how do we then go, all right, we can't have it only be for us, by us. How do we make it more accessible for other people?
I think now more than ever, it's so easy because there are so many channels. I mean, it used to be not that long ago. If you wanted to put out an album, publish a book, release a film, launch a television show, you had to have so many connections and so many resources. Whereas now, I mean, you can actually do a lot of that with your phone. And just creating the content's the first step. And then once it's created, and that's usually the biggest hurdle that from talking to other like aspiring creators and things like that. It's like, you know, just getting it out there. Because once it's out there, the masses will pick it up, especially if you focus on, again, quality content. Even if you do something that's more exploitative and that doesn't have that quality behind it, once it's out there, it'll be picked up by somebody.
Right.
Because we have an unprecedented ability to make things accessible.
Well, speaking of books out there, we are now on your third book. Is that correct?
Yeah, actually, yeah, this is my third finished book, my fourth one just 3 weeks
ago. Well,
now.
Congratulations.
Wow.
Okay, so we are, so the third one that is available now, so you can get it. He was kind enough to bring us in. I love the smell of books. He brought us in a hard copy of it because I was going to have to pull this down on my Kindle. And I
take a picture of it and post it.
I'm kind of disappointed that I turned it to a Kindle person. But it was out of necessity. So The Preternaturalist by T. Aaron Sisko. As I said, you have to keep track of all of Taylor's pseudonyms because you. I feel like you do a good job of compartmentalizing each of your worlds.
Got to keep the bubble separate. Or
So if people would like to pick up your books, then they need to go and look up T. Aaron Sisko, and they can also find this on Amazon.
Yes, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. So tell us about this book.
So the Preternaturalist, and really all of my books, they all start because I have an idea and they go looking for it and they don't find it.
Okay.
And so I'm of the
I wish there was a.
Right. Okay. And I'm of that idea that, like, you know, if you want something, don't necessarily wait for someone else to make it for you or to bring it to you. Like, if I'm hungry at home, I can tell my wife and she'll say, "That's great. You know where the kitchen is."
Fair
so
enough.
Just applying that same philosophy. So Preternaturalist is an idea of, okay, we have so many sci-fi, just speculative fiction, just fiction in general, where the main purpose is we have to save the world.
Right.
And then I was thinking, because I was also watching the news, it's like, maybe the world doesn't deserve to be saved. And, like, I would love to see, not in a cynical way, but just someone who has the power to, like, you know, save the world. And just kind of like, I don't think so. Like,
have you met the world? The world's a bit of the worst.
And especially just because of, like, recently what's going on, like, in politics here
right.
in the U.S. especially, it's kind of like, well, if we have so many things like racism, homophobia, transphobia, sexism, theocracy, is this the world that you really want to, like, continue on?
Right.
Or maybe we should start over.
Burn it down. Restart it again.
Yeah.
Exactly. Control-Alt-Delete.
Control-Alt-Delete.
Turn it off.
Turned it off and on again?
Kick it a couple times. See if it comes out better the next time.
And the other big piece, too, because I work primarily within the realm of what we consider Afrofuturism or Black sci-fi, but I also, growing up, I had a lot of friends that were Latinx. I mean, mm-hmm. my best friend, who was the best man at a wedding, we're basically brothers. You know, he's second-generation Mexican. And, like, we'll get into conversations like, man, it's finally great. We got, like, Black Panther, and, like, they got them both on the big screen. He's got the show on YouTube, and, like, now they're going to have Ta-Nehisi Coates is doing the series. Roxanne Gay is writing for the series. He's like, yeah, there's no Mexicans
yep.
in
right.
sci-fi. And I was like, what are you talking about? There's tons of, I was like, oh, my God, there are no Mexicans in sci-fi. So very consciously and deliberately, the primary protagonist, the Preternaturalist, is a Mexican woman named Tatiana, and she is imbued with all these abilities, and she works for a clandestine organization called the Cooperative that was brought together to try and solve these issues, and then they realize that they're losing, and so they just give her everything at once, and her job is to sort of find an alternative plane to kind of nudge it back into existence.
Interesting.
Very. So I'm excited.
So how do you come up with concepts or conceptuals to actually start a book?
Oh, man. All over the place. Mm-hmm. So my previous book right before Preternaturalist from last year is Dragon Variation. And so that title is because I'm a huge chess nerd, because I'm just a huge nerd. So chess kind of comes with the package. That one was my oldest daughter and I were running errands, just getting groceries.
Sure.
And she was 5 years old, 6 years old at the time. Just
don't they have the best ideas?
It was so great.
Ever.
It was out of nowhere. I was like, she was asking when we're going to go home. I was like, well, we still have to run to this place. We have to pick this up. And she's like, okay. And then out of nowhere, apropos to nothing, she's like, hey, if you eat a wizard, do you become a wizard? And it's like,
that's you're like, great question.
That's a really good question, because wizards are power, are energy, and if you absorb energy, my mind is blown.
She had there was some rationale. She's like, yeah, you know, you tell me, like, if I eat too many sweets, then I'm going to, like, get unhealthy. So, like, if I eat too many wizards, do I
get
magic?
What you eat,
and
yes.
Like, well, I don't know. And that just kind of sat with me for a little bit, and I was like, well, what if there was, and it became an allegory for race and class.
Okay.
Where the main character of Dragon Variation is a woman named Sky who has certain gifts, because we're kind of post-apocalyptic and people have these mutations, but not mutations because that's copyright of Fox.
Yep.
Right.
They have these abilities, and if you consume their flesh, then you gain those abilities for a short amount of time. And so I just kind of stretch that out, just blow it way out, take that all the way past, like, where you kind of follow that train of thought.
Yeah.
So these people now work for the government to help the military gain these abilities. So they're kind of like, because it regenerates. Like, if you eat, you know, thigh meat or a piece of arm, then that part grows back on that gifted person.
Gotcha.
But the person who ate it is now temporarily imbued with, like, you know, superhuman strength and abilities.
Got it.
And so they have volunteered for the government to kind of like, yeah, we want to be down with the cause. But then it turns out the government's really just exploiting them. They're not, there is no cause. It's this sort of never-ending cycle, which is, you know, apples to apples comparison for pretty much any group that wasn't on the Mayflower.
Ah.
And this country's like, yeah, you guys come over here. In some cases, like, we're taking you
just
over here.
Just because your daughter said, right, do you exactly become a wizard nice if you eat a wizard?
Yeah. And your first book was Teleportality.
Yes. Oh, my God. That was, yeah.
What is that? What's that face?
So, though, that was the labor of love. That was, yes, one. Like, I never sought out to be an author, right, or to write anything, but I had a concept back in 2003 when I was working in television, aspiring to be a filmmaker, and I had an idea of, I wanted to see a female character that wasn't a trope.
Right.
Because I love Ripley from Aliens. I was a really big fan of the Resident Evil series for PlayStation. Yep. So I like, and my favorite comic book character and comic series of all time is Wonder Woman. So strong female, sure, characters, it was like a no-brainer. I had to do it. So I had a character called Billy Badass. Can I say that?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. And she was basically a hit woman who, like, just did her job. Like, it was the way that Hollywood currently writes, you know, assassins or, like, badass, yep, characters. That was basically how I wrote Billy. And I started chasing that, wrote a couple proof of concepts. I had a nice spec script going. I got a few meetings, actually some interest. But every meeting I took, all the notes were basically chipping away at it. Like, well, can she have a love interest?
Right.
Can we, you know, make her sexy in this part? Can she do this and that? It's like, that's not at all what the character is.
Right.
And I kept pushing on it, and I kept adapting it and made it more of a sci-fi. So, okay, now she's not just a hit woman. She actually was killed years ago, brought back through science and all these techniques that are called neurogenesis.
Right.
And so this is perfect. Now they can't try and push love interest because she's a zombie with powers. Like,
right,
come on. And same thing. I actually got to the point where I had a meeting with a...
They're like, zombies need love too.
Yeah, pretty big
come
studio.
Come on, Cisco.
I was describing the opening scene of the spec strip. I was like, all right, we're open. It's nighttime. It's a future landscape. There are giant buildings and robots everywhere. And then I know her, boom, there's this cool blue streak of this super fast woman on a motorcycle being chased by a giant tank. And they're shooting at her. It's crazy. And they're like, oh, we love it. We love it. We're with you. Hey, what if there's like a love scene here?
Love scene where?
Exactly.
Why do you have time for that?
I was like, so she's on a motorcycle being shot at, and you wanted to pull over and just bang somebody? They're like, well, we just want to keep the audience, you know, engaged.
That's not engaging enough.
It's like, if you have some sexy woman, it's like, I didn't say she was sexy. It's just a woman. They're like, well, you know, she'll be sexy. And like all these things.
Oh, and my God.
Yeah.
And this is where you want to like bang your head against the wall,
right,
to be like, are we on the same planet here? Like,
right,
what are we talking, yeah, about?
Like, had I been smart, maybe I would have, like, taken the offer and made all the changes and tried to get the green light and then try to parlay that into something later on. But I was very young and full of, like, no, it's my way, the highway. I have artistic integrity. And
good for you.
Well, now you're
good for you. Because that would have, I'm sorry, if that would have happened, that would have gotten butchered in the big screen. That, I mean, the same things. Why would you, anyways,
yeah,
we can go down that.
But it just sat on the shelf for a little bit, and then I wanted to come back to it, and I actually had another crazy idea where it's like, okay, so you have things like Memory Alpha, which is the Star Trek wiki, you've got the Potterverse, you've got all these different wikis that are made after the fandom. What if I make a wiki first and bring that as like my show bible?
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
It really helped with the writing, because with the wiki, if I got bored writing narrative or reached a block with character development, I could go just write paragraphs about like one aspect of the technology,
right, right,
or I,
yes,
could talk about these side stories. And so it really helped keep the character alive for many years until finally I was like, well, you know what? She's been with me for the majority of my adult life. I need to just get it out so I can move on, have some closure. And so I just took some of the better stories from the wiki, threw them together into what became Teleportality.
And now we're coming up on your fourth book that you said, yes, is coming out next month?
Yes.
And what's that about?
So that's Shadow of the Valley.
Okay.
And same basic start of my process. I grew up, my family's from the South. I grew up in the church. A predominantly black church, and I love horror movies. And now every horror movie that deals with possession always does so from the Catholic dogma.
Correct.
But for some reason, and this is for decades, I've yet to find a movie that dealt with possession, what religious, like demonic possession, that was not from the Catholic dogma. But within the faith that I was raised in, there are definitely stories of possession and demons and all kinds,
oh,
of,
oh, yeah,
other. So it's like, I'm going to write a story that is about, instead of like this cute white girl in the suburbs who gets possessed by a demon, there's a conflicted priest. This is six guys that are, you know, stand-ins for my own knucklehead buddies and I growing up. They're in Southside Chicago, like six black dudes that now have to go fight against an evil church, but it's all from the sort of Baptist apostolic doctrine.
Mm. Oh, that Bapticostal. That'll come get you.
Yeah,
I grew up,
yeah,
Bapticostal. Woo. God, like, so, that's a battle. I can see it.
Because my grandma was a, like, old black woman. She had a lot of old black Southern sayings, and she'd sometimes say, "Oh, that's just nothing but the devil."
Right,
the devil
right.
Got it to him. Like, well,
and it's very superstitious. Like my grandmother was very superstitious.
I grew up in Mississippi. Same thing.
Yeah, and it really is like there's things now that I, as what I consider a semi-rational adult, I still have a lot of those things stuck in my head where I go, no, it doesn't matter that somebody brushed your foot right. with a broom and you just, oh, you spilt this salt. You know, all these things that I grew up going, this will happen. Like, this is the silliest one that I have is that I remember my grandmother, because I grew up in that Baptist, I remember my grandmother, it's almost, I call her my voodoo grandma. It wasn't flat out group, but very, very particular about what you do with your hair and how you discard it. And there were a lot of rituals to what it was and how you clean the hairbrush and the combs and where that it goes. So now, as an adult, I still have to talk myself out of all of those things because I'm, you know, and this is years in like this is stuff. This is 40 years later. I'm still going, I don't have to burn all of the hair out of my hairbrush. It's okay if so, like, oh, and you can't flush it because then you'll end up with migraines and you can't do this. There's a lot of can'ts, a lot of can'ts. So I think that this is ripe. Right. I'm very excited to see this, Taylor. Very excited.
Have you ever made any of your wikis or even the conceptuals into visual art, like actual short films? Or
I did make one short film, and so it's kind of weird because I have so many interests, and I try mm-hmm. to follow them as much as possible. I have one weird short film where, again, same concept. I was like, I want to see a story. Because a lot of things are done like the old Truffaut method where yep. you can start at the end and go backwards, or there are some other things from French New Wave. Tarantino made them big in the 90s with, like, you know, out of sequence, non-chronological. I was like, well, what if you just had two stories of two characters that are going to meet, but you start one at the beginning and one at the ending, and then they meet in the middle, and that's the climax.
Yeah.
So I do have a short film out there. It's called Minneapolis South, which, speaking of representation, became an accidental, we call it Hmong-sploitation.
Okay.
Because I just reached out to my one buddy who's an actor, and he's Mexican-American, great guy, Oscar Xavier Del Sebastian, really fun, always down for whatever, whenever I have any crazy ideas. He's like, yeah, let's do it. He's one of those guys. I was like, well, we need characters. He's like, well, your script's good. I was like, well, yeah, I need people to be those characters.
Right.
And he had just come, because this is the type of person that Oscar is, he went to the open call for extras for Gran Torino when I was shooting at St.
Yep.
Paul. Now, Oscar is not Hmong at all. He doesn't look Hmong, but he's just like, oh, they're shooting? Yeah, I'll just show up, see what happens, because, again, he's that
right.
kind of free spirit.
And right.
He didn't get picked for very, very obvious reasons. But he just ended up hanging around.
Yeah, all these great actors. Yeah.
And he met all these great actors who all just happened to be Hmong American. And so he started calling them up. And they're all like, oh, yeah, that sounds great. And so, yeah, Minneapolis, it's on Amazon.
He became a producer all of a sudden.
mm-hmm.
That's great.
And I mean, speaking of producer, I mean, you are currently the executive producer of a show called Dinner Time.
Yes.
Which we can also get on Amazon.
Yes.
Okay. And so tell us about that one.
Yes, Dinner Time is actually, that's my legit actual project on Amazon Prime Video. It is a hybrid cooking and history program where the host is Dr. Lisa Rudy. She's actually a history professor, PhD, but she's also a great cook. The only reason she's not a chef because she never had culinary training, but she's phenomenal. We were having a conversation, and she was just talking about some cool ideas when she was finishing her doctoral thesis on the First Ladies and all these cool stories that surrounded food. Like, you know, after the Cuban Missile Crisis, JFK went on TV. He's like, hey, everybody, the end of the world might be tomorrow, but stay tuned. And then, like, you know, he went off to a state dinner, like, that same night. And she's like, yeah, they made duck a l'orange, and, like, his mistress was there, but so was Jackie. So was this and she's telling all these stories. I was like, this would be an awesome television show.
Right.
Like, I would watch this, and then especially if you saw how to make
it. She was cooking stuff, the same meals or whatever.
Right. And so that's the premise of the show, is that we discuss some kind of pivotal event, occurrence, or person in history, and then tie a food to it. So the first episode,
cool.
we did just that one, the Cuban Missile Crisis, where we showed clips of Kennedy's speech, and then we went up to Duluth to talk, because there was a near scare during that time period where the klaxon went off by accident.
Okay.
Right.
And we almost wired Wisconsin to, like, send fighter jets out, because it was all an accident. It turned out a black bear, like, breached the perimeter. It was, like, near miss. And then Lisa goes in the kitchen, and she's like, all right, let's learn how to make, like, duck a l'orange with wild rice pilaf, the same one they had at a state dinner back in 1963. Second episode was about Pullman porters. And so we tie that more to a contemporary bend of how the Pullman porters don't get a lot of love. But, like, coming out of the war, that was really the only or one of the few jobs that African-American men could do and actually make a decent living. I mean, they had to be away from their families because they're riding the rails, but they were like a major contributor to building not just Twin Cities, but also like the rest of the country.
Right.
And the hardest part now with the new episodes is coming up with something that hasn't been done. or something interesting. So the question wasn't, what did Pullman Porter serve? Because you can go to the National Library of Congress website and you can see dozens of old-timey train menus and what all the wealthy people were eating. We're like, what did the porters eat?
Right.
Like, they're on the rails for, like, you know, 3 to 6 months at a time. They're eating something. And the closest we could find was that they were allowed to make Pullman loaf sandwiches.
Okay.
So the Pullman loaf was actually this kind of revolutionary way of making bread loaves. They were perfectly rectangular. So instead of stacking two, which are kind of rounded, traditional loaves, you had these square loaves. So you could get almost like 4 or 5 into the little tight compartments on the trains. And they would make these sandwiches. And they would make some really interesting combinations. Because you only were allowed to eat when you had time, which was, you know, here and there. You didn't get like an hour break to go knock off for lunch. So we had a marmalade and butter sandwich on Pullman loaf.
It was
interesting.
But no, I'm not even surprised about that. That sounds something my grandma would eat. And I think it's so many things where you hear about, you know, things that were that we used to eat because they were cost effective or time effective for the people at the time. And now I think it's interesting that a lot of these things are now becoming so, like, they're the new fancy things that we have now. When it used to be, well, you had to be efficient and use the whole animal.
Right.
And now we're like, well, no, now this is high
couture. Now it's $500 for this tiny little.
When before, I'm like, that was because we had to eat all of the animal. You know, and so now it's like, oh, no. Now it's called, you know, now this is the highbrow part.
What's the show called again?
It's called Dinner Time.
Dinner Time.
So the idea, I think it's funny, and everyone who works with me on the show hates the name, but it's like, because it's dinner. Because food and then time
is history.
They're like, that's terrible.
Would you ever do a future episode where it's a... So obviously you're talking about history and what had happened. So if you think about, again, you, as your Afrofuturist, think about something that would be served if this happened.
Oh, that'd be really cool. I'm not sure if that would fit the particular show, but I would definitely be open.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things, like, as you kind of see culture progressing, as you see things happening, you can even, again, no idea. I'll be fascinated to see
what do you think would happen?
Well, I'd be fascinated to see what kind of meal could be made out of something that was coming out of your imagination of what could happen in the future, but not a dystopian society, but, like, this could really happen in the next 10 years. What would they eat? What would they have for a meal? What would that state dinner look like if this thing happened? Whether positive or negative, like, we're gonna do a manned mission to Mars. Well, what would that dinner look like?
Oh yeah, no, I love that. Like, one of the big problems we're having now, as far as consumption on a global scale, is with meat that we're actually running out. And like, one of the most overlooked sources of protein that we have in abundance is actually insect based.
Right.
So I could definitely see an episode where it's kind of like, okay, like, we know that because climate change is real. Sorry to offend any of your listeners that
you're not. And it's interesting because we did have a food scientist on a few episodes ago where we were talking about, what are the options out there for insect protein and how do we work on those things. And she had some options as well on other ways that protein could be continued. And it was interesting to talk to her about where people are calling this, like, Frankenstein science, but it's like, well, no, here's what we could do, and it wouldn't be better if we could have an animal that was raised this or a protein that was grown this way.
Well, especially because a lot of the aversion to insect-based proteins is very Western.
Right.
Like,
correct.
It's not that out of the ordinary in many other countries.
No, it's like normal food.
There's so many animals that we've just chosen to be unfit for consumption kind of arbitrarily. Like, I remember there's a big scandal a few years back on the news with, like, horse meat being used and something. It's like, well, why?
Right.
I mean, I've never had it, but I mean, if it tastes good, let's go.
Right. anyway, so I didn't want to, like, throw you off with, like, something cute, but I'd be just fascinated to see
because
you have to have a history to kind of think about what would the progression look like into the future. Right. We're not going to come up with random things. Like, we're going to use the things that we have around us.
Right.
And a new take at it. Like, I wouldn't eat a cardboard. I don't know. Would I? Like, it's around us. Does it have... I don't want to eat cardboard.
I mean, paper
guys.
Is...
That
a
totally, I'm looking
resource.
At Shannon.
Right.
Shannon's going to be like, that's your next
your next challenge is you could just... Well, we'll make sandwiches out of paper. I think that's very easy and accessible and possibly a good way of recycling. Kind of thing. That might be a good way to do it.
I just pulled up your website for... Your band, by the way. And I want to say that is a pretty badass cover you got there.
Thank you. That was
TroyAaron.com.
Yeah, Yep, Trey Aaron. That was a photographer's idea. I'm much more camera shy. I mean, the reason why I wear the
you don't look camera shy at all.
No,
this photo is dope. You look like a very muscular Hootie and the Blowfish, is what it is. It's very. I was like, look, if he like really just got ripped, if like, then that looks like you know, and that's Trey Aaron. So if you want to go, it's T-R-E. A-A-R-O-N. So we could do that. And so let's play that. And then we still want to talk about some of your picks for the fall TV and movie thing. So the one that I picked, and I probably should have asked, you know, Trey, since we knew he was going to be here, I should have asked him. But I didn't. I picked one that I liked. So I picked Beholden.
Oh, okay.
You're right. Yeah, he's like, you picked that? So here we have some of this.
Childhood and ashes, the future starts burning. I don't know where I'm going. Won't you rendezvous with me? Close your eyes, open your heart. Let it all baptize me.
Taylor, why did you pick this genre? Why is this important to you?
Well, I grew up with music. My mother is from Louisville, Kentucky, and I still have a lot of family in the South, New Orleans, and all around, and just grew up with country music. And really the biggest thing, too, is that country music is really all music.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, blues and country are they're not even cousins. They're close siblings. They're
right.
Almost conjoined twins. And I think the only reason why it's split is because of music business executives deciding to make things genre. I mean, Ray Charles was a country musician. Charlie Pride is probably a huge
right.
Black country musician. I do get that question quite a bit, sometimes at shows, sometimes during shows, about being a black guy playing country. And it's kind of like, well, yeah, country music is black music.
Right.
All music is black music. I'm black and making it, so that makes it black music.
Right.
And also, I think country is one of the last art forms, too, that there's definitely a pop segment, and that gets kind of big, but there's still where the musicianship and songwriting is still kind of held key, and that's kind of what pushes people over.
I do like the storytelling aspect of most of the even the pop country songs.
Absolutely.
That are still out there. And I do agree with you. There's some songs that, yes, they're country songs, but they might as well be, speaking of problematic people, an R. Kelly song. I'm like, you're singing the same
sure.
things, like kind of thing, where I'm like, you're saying the same thing. And I'm trying to, like, I mean, you can rattle off a bunch of artists. I'm like, it's really just an R&B song that has guitars, more guitars in it, instead of an organ or something behind
absolutely.
It.
And it's still allowed to draw from things, even though it doesn't get that recognition. Like, it's really easy to have a list of rappers or even rock musicians that would talk about drawing on their outside influences to create something new. I know one of the big things now, it seems, at least the hip-hop I listen to, is a lot of, like, West African and Eastern
correct.
Instruments right.
being pulled into the mix. But with country, for some reason, they don't do that too often. So a lot of our country music, we do try to pull in, not that far away, but we do pull in our other influences, like my two guitarists are both more from the rock, jazz
sure.
background. Our drummer has a very solid, like, church, R&B, funk background. Is that, I mean, one of the songs, I'm surprised most people tune like Shakespearean.
I like Shakespearean as well. I liked this one, though. Is that why you made that face? Like, why'd you pick this one?
Okay. One, like, mixing in, like, we do quote Shakespeare a lot
yes.
in the middle of Shakespearean. It starts with an organ, and we're kind of like making fun of that sort of like Bapticostal
right.
upbringing, where we're talking about, you know, bringing down the spirit of Oh Hell Yeah, which is sort of our unofficial tagline. Yeah, and also I should also specify the website is sort of our like our professional face, but really just a couple of knock around guys having fun. We're not trying to be rock stars.
And you do have a show though coming up.
We do. Yeah, we're playing over at Honey in Northeast Minneapolis.
Honey is
yeah,
a great place.
Honey.
Yeah, I love it.
For Halloween, it's our third Halloween show called the Halloween Hell Yeah. And again, the website's definitely that's more the polished, the serious face. But like our live show, like we cover Kanye West, we've covered Selena Gomez, like country versions.
We
just have a good time.
So when is that show?
That's the 27th, which is the Saturday.
Yep. Got it.
Yeah, so we got to go check that all out. And I don't know when you found time to write this article, but I am very impressed because you, I mean, I don't know how you will have time to watch any TV, Taylor, but you did have this great article.
This guy has 48 hours in one day. Just, he teleportation, whatever he wrote, he actually manifested.
I mean, if you live in those secrets,
teleportality,
it's habits. Like a lot of people, when they talk about time management, they get really hung up on the scheduling. And it's not about scheduling, because you're always going to be a little early, a little late for something. It's
right.
about just building habits. So, like, every Sunday night, for example, I see a movie in theaters. Yep. And I just that's just something I do on Sunday. So I might be at 5 in the evening. It might be, like, a late show at, like, 8 or 9. But on Sundays, I know, okay, Sunday night, I'm going to see a movie. I know that, like, my writing, I do that usually around my lunch breaks during the day. I try and scribble some stuff down here. So whether that's 11:30 or if it's a late day and it's, like, at 2 o'clock, I know that I'm going to sit down and at least have 15, 20 minutes to write something.
So most successful people quote time management as the key to their success, as opposed to having like sleeping, like not sleeping for whatever.
It's never sleeping.
It's literally what you're saying. Regardless of what you put on paper, you have this dedicated amount of time that you're giving yourself every single day to do that.
Right.
And whether it's one paragraph that comes out or four pages.
Exactly. And then also there's that flexibility. So I think when people start saying, oh, I'm too harried, I want to do more, get some time management skills, they focus so intently on that schedule. And then if you miss anything, like, okay, at 11 o'clock from 11 to noon, I'm do this. If you're a little bit behind, well, that throws your whole schedule off. Whereas if you're just more focused on the task, eventually it doesn't even become about the schedule. It just becomes about the activity and becomes a habit. So it's really
so do you have watching particular TV shows on your schedule?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, I thought it was interesting because, Jayden, when I was looking through his article, it's a very good, don't watch this, watch this.
So does he have, like, SpongeBob SquarePants on there?
SpongeBob's cool. My girls are more into Peppa Pig.
Yeah, right on.
Oh, yeah. Peppa. Yeah, they're a little young yet.
My kid's all about Cat in the Hat.
We're still on Thomas, you know? I keep thinking
Thomas
he's going to get over Thomas, and then he's back on Thomas. Because now there's new Thomas. So, and I really did appreciate some of this because I also appreciate, because back to, you know, we're talking about kids. My child runs my TV. So I don't hear about grown-up programming unless one of my grown-up friends who's better at it than I am suggests things. So why don't we start with, just because we do talk about movies a lot, let's do a little bit of TV.
Sure.
Is that okay, Taylor? And so if you want to just tell us a couple of things that you would suggest on what, as we're moving into fall and people are going to be more, you know, sedentary and we're looking for good things to binge, are there any shows out there you think are worthy that we should maybe get involved in?
Absolutely. I mean, one that's mentioned in the article, for example, after Roseanne Barr's big blowout and then she doubled down on her silliness, One Day at a Time is severely overlooked. It's on Netflix. It's a it's a remake of the old 70s or 80s.
A slightly
sitcom.
Reimagined version, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a single mother. She's a Puerto Rican family. She's a Latinx family.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Puerto Rican Colombian. She's a nurse, and she's raising her two girls, and her mom also lives with them. And it's the same kind of blue-collar, working-class, like, everyman, quote-unquote, situational comedy.
Right.
But without, you know, having a racist star.
Right.
Yep.
And it's genuinely good. Like, the storylines are compelling. It's better than sitcom writing needs to be.
Got it.
Like, some of the arcs and the jokes are smart. They push the envelope sometimes. Like, is this a network show?
The way you said it's better than it needs to be.
Right.
Because you're right. Because a lot of these things were like, it's popcorn for my brain anyway.
Right.
But then if you go, they did the extra work.
It's almost like they remember the kind of the golden age of sitcom. Well, golden age for me was like the mid-80s for sitcoms. Because, I mean, I know that another problematic star, but the Cosby Show, the program, not the man.
Yep.
Correct.
The program was incredibly, like, adept at mixing serious issues without being a serious show. Like,
correct.
You didn't have the very special episode, but you still had a lesson. And I thought it was more effective that way because it wasn't being shoved down your throat. It was kind of like, there's one of my favorites, Theo, decides that he's grown. He was like 17 in the episode.
Is that when he, like, does a Monopoly money
And then, like, the whole family, like, turns the house into, like, an apartment and he has to deal with real issues.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like this way of saying, like, hey, like, stuff's going to get real when you get older, so enjoy what you have. But that wasn't, like, hammered at you.
Right.
Wasn't, like, there was no soft music, and then, like, you know, Claire sits down. It's like, okay, son, what did we learn
right.
today? It's like, you know, he got kicked out of his room because Denise was the landlord, and
yep.
So it was fun. And I think a lot of sitcoms now are either pulling from that, or maybe because the showrunners and writers are like my age, or sadly, or younger.
Right.
They grew up with that same stuff, and like they're bringing that experience and some of those influences from their childhood into it. And the competition is fierce now.
It is.
Really, Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon
have killing it.
Forced the Netflix.
Yeah. Exactly.
Step their game up, except for one of them, which, again, I'm not going to trash any business. Well,
you can just.
You're like, eventually, I might want to.
This is an opinion show. You can talk about, you know, again, these are the things. So, what's this show called again? One Day at a Time.
Yes, One Day at a Time.
Got it.
It's on Netflix.
Rita Moreno's in it now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that one's fantastic.
It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And another show similar to that, which doesn't really have a direct comparison, it's actually not even mentioned in an article, that I have been obsessed with last couple months, is The Good Place.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I've heard great things about
the Ted Danson show.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The writing is incredible. The stories, again, it doesn't need to be that good because it's an NBC program, so it could get away with just being a sitcom. It could just be an NBC, like, you know, primetime comedy. But they deal with stuff in a way similar to One Day at a Time, where you're actually investing in the characters, they actually develop all the characters, and the representation on screen, I think, is unparalleled outside of maybe Netflix's Luke Cage.
Oh,
it
okay.
is probably nice. The single most diverse cast definitely in a sitcom. It's led by Kristen Bell,
yep.
you know, Veronica
yep.
Mars, and yep. but then it has a slew of other characters. There's Chahidi.
Yep.
Tahini, who is, I believe, Sri Lankan,
mm-hmm.
but she's got a British accent. She's actually played by a Sri Lankan actress. Then Jason, who is Filipino. Chidi, who is in the show, he's Nigerian, but I believe he's just like an African American, or he's just a British American.
Sure.
And it's all like Maya Rudolph has a cameo role or recurring guest spot. It's one of those most diverse casts. And the best part, too, is it's not like a United Colors of Benetton ad. We're kind of like, check it out.
Right. We got this. Guy. We got this.
Time for this one.
Like,
right.
Like the characters actually make sense that they would be getting along and hang out together because of who the characters are and the fact that they just happen to be from different ethnic backgrounds or racial backgrounds.
Right. It's not forced.
Right. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't feel forced.
It makes it feel much more realistic.
It's called a Good Place.
Yes, A Good Place. And Ted Danson's the other star.
Right.
And he plays in...
And part of the reason I bring him up is that he's like 74, 75. I'm like,
looks good.
He's holding up very well.
Like,
I'm all like, whatever you're drinking, it's working for you.
What about shows we should not watch?
Oh my God.
Just one or two. And give a reason why, like, you know, why you don't prefer it.
See, it hurts to say it because Marvel's been so good to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was a spell where Marvel and Star Trek were like my only friends. But Marvel's series Iron Fist,
I agree.
Like if you watch,
I actually agree.
You know, if you watch Luke Cage, you watch Jessica Jones, you watch Daredevil,
they're capable of doing better.
Fantastic.
Yes.
And then they're like, "Here's Iron Fist." Like what?
I watched the first episode of the second season. I'm like, "No, I'm good."
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm good.
I was hoping that they would get better after the first season, which we all were very a lot of us were very disappointed in, because it's like you could do better. The fact that they have this character that is the poster boy for white privilege and doesn't know it,
right.
like that would have made me find a little bit of joy in it. If they even kind of like
poked at it
a little bit, like how come you don't understand why you're the worst?
It sounds like they're trying to make a bad program
right.
with Iron Fist, because everything else has been so good. And the bar was so low coming out of season one, which I thought was
exactly.
of the worst television.
Yeah.
And it was because it wasn't just that I found it problematic from a perspective of the way they have this, you know, the talk about just tropes. It's like you know, you come back in here and it's, you know, the typical great white hope, come in, all the stuff. That part I was already finding lazy. But it also was just, in my opinion, poorly constructed. And for a series of Netflix shows that already are known for being slow, because most of those things should only be 6 episodes, and we stretch all of them out, even the ones I like. It should be 6 to 8 episodes of
yes.
Luke Cage. It shouldn't be 12 or 14 or whatever.
Yeah,
why?
Well,
I know they want more because then they get more views. But it really, like any other comic book arc, it should be like 8.
Well, a perfect example of that is the show Godless on Netflix. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen it, it's 8 episodes.
Yeah,
of brilliance. It's just brilliant, and I am so content. I would watch that again. I would stream that entire series again.
Versus stretching it out.
But it was like done. We're going to do this one season. It's a mini series. It's on Netflix. It's 8 episodes. Brilliant cast. Concentrated. We're done.
Mm-hmm.
And like you're just satisfied.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, like Luke Cage, especially. I was hype.
Yeah,
that first trailer dropped in season one, and I was like, "Whoa, season one is like 4 episodes too long." Like
it was. Yes. Exactly.
I mean, I guess spoilers for a 3-year-old program, but like once Cottonmouth was dead, I was like, "That's the end of the season."
Yes,
because everything after that, I was like, "What is this?
We don't need
this
it." Yeah,
is,
You're pushing it now.
Yeah. We're like, can you bring back Masahala somehow?
Marshall Ali.
Yeah, thank you. Kind of thing. I say his name wrong every time.
He's in our opening night film this year.
Oh, yes.
Green Book.
Very excited. Is that one sold out yet?
We actually sold out the first screening. We had to open up a second.
Congratulations on that.
One of the big things is real quick. Touching back on Iron Fist, yeah. One of the big problems I had with it was one of the problems I had with Orange is the New Black when that first came out, where it's that Orange is the New Black, the first season, it took me a while to get into it because I was not a fan of Taylor Kieran's portrayal of Piper.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, Piper is the least interesting character. Mm-hmm. All these other characters on her are so fascinating, and it was
they kept her alive,
right.
Watch it. But then they realized it, or felt like over the past 5-6 seasons, we're going to dive more into the background characters. Piper's still here, but right. She's just kind of, it's an ensemble cast now. And that's like Iron Fist. There's so many great potential characters they could be following that you get angry when you're watching. You're like, I don't care about Danny. Like,
right.
Get him out of the
right.
way.
Mm-hmm. Like, we know enough about him now. Like,
yes.
We get it.
We get it. Yes. It's all, yes, fine. Next. Yes. Next.
That's one I'm definitely, I would, if someone
disappointed
says, should I miss
about.
It?
Yeah. No, right on.
Are you still watching Star Trek Discovery?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'll be honest, I have not started that yet. And I'm looking forward to it. It's one of those, Shannon was asking before the podcast started today. She was like, what are you watching right now? I'm like, nothing. I have nothing. Like, I can't concentrate on anything except the festival. But as soon as the festival is over, I have this giant list of things that I'm going to deep dive into come November, December, January, February.
Right.
And that's on the top of my list of Discovery.
Well, you said you were Trekkie, or you mentioned that you were Trekkie.
I am.
You're going to love Discovery. Like, some Trekkies are saying they don't like it. They're lying to you. Everyone likes Discovery. Because it so many, and understandably so many properties, television shows and movies, they are going for universal appeal.
Right.
So especially with adaptive properties, they were going to trim the fat off the edges, kind of like you mentioned with Venom. They're going to kind of, like, coddle it and reshape it so that way it has a bigger audience. Because it's going out to people who might not like the fandom. Discovery was made by Trekkies for Trekkies.
Got it.
And
nice.
It seems the attitude
yes.
is, like, well, if you don't know what's happening, too
that's
bad.
Your fault.
It's too bad.
Just come along with us.
Right.
But this ain't
enjoy the
you,
ride, but it's right.
In.
Right.
And it also respects the old fandom by not even addressing it, really. Like, there's hints here and there, and it's definitely tied to the universe, but the story...
They don't keep it so precious that they're not willing to do to go there when they need to go there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And again, back to diversity.
The CBS property.
Just
right?
CBS.
Yes.
CBS All Access.
All Access, yeah.
And back to it's diverse without... making a big deal all the time of it. It just is on so many of these things.
Oh, yeah.
And it's part of the story and part of their characters and why you need them to be all the stuff, but they're like not the champion of whatever they are.
Right. Yo, absolutely. I mean, like the old, like I grew up watching reruns of TOS, Kirk and Spock, and watching them again older. Still love them because there's that nostalgic tinge, but it's like, oh my God, this is one of the most accident, like well-intentioned racist
yep.
programs. Because Chekhov is the Russian from Russia. Like George Takei or Sulu
yep.
is
yeah.
the Japanese guy from Japan
right.
who knows all the old Japanese part.
And like then whenever they go a little crazy, all of a sudden he ends up sweaty and with the samurai sword. It's a little lot. It's a little much.
Like Uhura has to be from Africa. Or
right.
even moving into Next Generation, like Geordi is also from Africa. It's like, wait, why is there still an Africa in the 24th century? If we're talking about exploring the galaxy,
correct.
He's just a human. If we've
right.
got thousands of other, so looking back, but Discovery is just kind of like, nah, this is who it is.
Right.
Like where they're from, that doesn't really matter because like, watch what's about to happen where they're at right now. You're like, whoa.
Which is great.
Well, Taylor, so we need to have you back on again. But
yes,
in the
please.
Meantime, I know there are so many places that they can find you. But let's let you showcase where you want people to find you first.
Oh boy. So TC Trek Trivia. At tctrek.com, we run, it's the only recurring pub trivia dedicated solely to all things Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also the producers of Wibbly Wobbly Wednesday, which is the only recurring pub trivia dedicated to all things Doctor Who. That's all the information at tctrek.com. They're all ages. It's every second and fourth Wednesday, sort of Star Trek and Doctor Who, respectively. It's a good time. It's all family fun. I mean, some of the language gets a little naughty here and there. It isn't a bar, but it's a bar and grill. So if you got kids, kids are welcome too. There's no cover. You can play by yourself or you can bring a team. So that's a great place to find that out. If you like country music,
yes.
TreyAaron.com, TreAaron.com. Just a couple of knock around guys having some fun making some country music. And last I checked, we're still the only black-fronted country band gigging in the Twin Cities.
Congratulations.
Nice.
I like it. I like it a lot.
You want more, though.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. Come on, other. Like, we want more, though. But we're happy that you are like leading the charge on it.
Well, the funny thing is when we play shows, especially, so we do a lot of stuff for like music in the parks. So we played like the July 4th Spectacular down by the river. We played May Day Festival and things like that. Played Holidays last year, which like, nah, that's, I mean,
a little chilly.
Again, if we're asked, like, whoa, just in case you don't know, it gets cold outside.
It does. I've been in that parade. Yeah,
country music and snow.
But then I like, but that would be a great thing. Like, I know they do some stuff over next to be at Victory Memorial Parkway, and they did some shows over there with some friends of ours.
Yeah, so, and every time we play those bigger shows where it's more than like, you know, friends and fans that we've seen a few times, when it's kind of general public, people always come up and they're awesome. They're black people or people of color in general, and they're like, you guys are really cool. Like, I didn't know that black people make country. Like, I love country. I've listened to that. Like, people have let us up on Twitter sometimes. Like, oh man, there's a black guy in Minneapolis playing country music. That's so cool.
Right. I grew up in Arizona, so I'm like, it's just been part of my playlist forever. Yeah.
So it's definitely a want for it from the public. And that was when I was trying to do my preparations because I didn't know what to expect to come on the show. I was going to whole launch thing about like the gatekeeping of like the Twin Cities, how it's like we do have a huge artistic community here. But sometimes in certain areas, it feels really hard to kind of break through, sort of like social circles. Like that Minnesota Nice extends to like certain venues and certain artistic endeavors. But I'm glad we kept positive.
So it's TreyAaron.com.
Yes, TreyAaron.com. And then all of my books are available on Barnes & Noble and or Amazon.com. You can just look for T. Aaron Cisco, and they all pop right up.
See why I had to make that face? I told you. It's so many pseudonyms, but it's...
So if there's a social media handle that they should go follow you on, which one would you prefer to give out? Right. And there are all of them.
He's like, too many.
Actually, just follow my basic Twitter. That's kind of where... That's the hub.
All-encompassing,
Everything kind of pops in there, and that's just Compositor, at C-O-M... Compositore.
Well, we will make sure we put all of that on our social media. We are Be Our Geek. You can also follow Be Our Geek on Facebook and Twitter. We'll make sure all that's there. And we always post all the information as well at TwinCitiesFilmFest.org. And tickets are actually on sale now, right, Jake?
Tickets are on sale. We've already had a few sellouts. And I believe next episode that we're going to do will be during the film festival.
Yes.
In a week or so.
Yes.
So just chime in and... We're going to try to get some of the celebrities and some filmmakers, and we love your feedback as well. So please do leave us comments and questions on our social media, and we'll definitely follow up.
And we will see you next time. Thank you for listening to Be Our Geek from the Twin Cities Film Fest studio, because everyone is a geek about something.